Welcome to Worker Movement, a podcast dedicated to the working class, a podcast dedicated to raising class consciousness. This podcast is for you, for us, for the worker.
If you choose to run for office, and we are absolutely encouraging you to do so, how do you determine your strategy? On this episode, we cover a simple binary decision. Can you actually win? Answering this question is important because it informs resource allocation of your campaign and the opposition. If you think you can win, you should do X to maximize your chances. If you don't think you can win, you should do Y to squander your opposition's resources.
If you are a newcomer in politics and you just decide to run now for the first time, there's a lot of headwinds for you winning. I'm just going to put that out there right now. Not trying to burst your bubble. It's just, it is what it is. If you're not a branded name in your town or county or city or township or school board area, whatever you want to run for, you have nothing to lose. You can do whatever you want to. And that's actually pretty awesome. So a lot of this episode is going to be, can you win? But also, what happens if you can't win? Or what are the benefits of you just running in general?
We want to help you choose whether you're going to run a campaign that attempts to win or whether you're going to run a campaign that attempts to agitate and advance some idea or plank or meet some other objective. There are other objectives that can be accomplished that aren't winning. So we want to help you choose what kind of campaign you're going to run. So in determining whether you can win, we have a series of questions and we're going to just talk about them. If you're going to run, you need to figure out who your competition is. Who are you running against? In most cases, you're going to be up against an incumbent. That incumbent has advantages. Why do you want to displace this incumbent? Do other people agree with your position? Is it a large community issue? Are people even aware of the incumbent's existence? This is all a little bit of research that you'll have to do to determine whether you have any shot at displacing an incumbent. But you have to figure out if they're even going to run. Sometimes this is very clear and overt. They've signaled way ahead of time, I'm going to run for this position indefinitely because I love being on the school board. Or they've run for 30 years in a row and there's no reason to believe they're not going to run for year 34. Probably going to run again. So you have to figure out who you're up against and then assess whether you think you have some reasonable means of beating them.
And when you start researching this, you need to understand who's going to retire, who's moving on, who's ineligible, because that should tip your hand into where you want to run. And quite honestly, it is hard to run your first campaign at the state level unless you are branded, unless you have a brand behind you, or chosen by the party to run. So if you're just trying to run for the first time, it's always advised to run for things like school board or city council or library or whatever your elected positions are that are local enough that you can get a nice contingency behind you to push and win, which means we should be looking for these positions of who's retiring and when. And also deciding if you want to run on an off cycle. And that off cycle means, are you going to be running on an odd year? Because some places have weird votes on odd years. You know, they always have like funding cycles or the county commissioner or the drain commissioner or something wild that's electable that you should run for. Or if it's going to be on an off even year, which means a non-presidential. Those in general have the least amount of people engaging and probably have the biggest shot for you to actually get your name recognition up, because that's the name of the game. The name of the game is to get weirdos to vote for you, and the only way to do that is to attempt to get your brand started. And this is basically why you run for the first time. I kind of jumped to the end there. I mean, the goal is to try to get your name as recognizable as possible so people vote for you. It doesn't really matter what your platform is, because most people don't give a shit what your platform is. It's just, can you get them to vote for you? It doesn't mean to overtly lie to people. It just means that most people don't care about all your platform. They care about one or two major things. So your goal, again, jumping right to the end, the big takeaway of all this is to get your name recognition up, because the second time you run is probably when you're going to have success.
So the entire concept behind checking whether there's an incumbent or if somebody has to retire is a calculus in brand recognition. People know who the incumbents are, not because they're aware of what position they hold, but simply because of the brand of that person's name. They ran before and they're a winner. Nobody pays attention to local government stuff like city council, county commissioner, school board. If you were to ask people who's on your school board, 98% of people in a given locality couldn't name a single person. And that's reflected in turnout and voting rates. In these off-year elections, you're going to see turnout rates that are like 5% of the entire voting eligible population. It's a very small subset. And if you're up against an incumbent, those 5% of people are probably that contingent that can actually name the incumbent. They can't name you. They don't know your name. And if they don't know your name, they're not going to vote for you, regardless of what your platform is. So there is some strategy to simply having people know your name and having your platform be absolutely vacuous. That can be beneficial.
So there's the other side of this. So before we get into the calculus behind brand recognition, the other question would be, are you going to run as a teardown, a contrarian, I don't believe the way we're moving is the right direction? Because the other way to do this is to try to disrupt and pull city council one way or the other, call their ideas dumb, and really get out there as to the platform that basically the way the city planning is doing is not acceptable. The way that they're giving tax abatements back to companies is not acceptable. The way that they're polluting is not acceptable. Whatever your platform is, you can call attention there too. Because that type of pressure means that you can actually make some changes to the way city council behaves or the school board behaves or whatever it is. But you're going to be known as the person that's a contrarian ready to go. But that also means that you're the person ready for change. So the second cycle, nobody's going to remember anything you've done. So sometimes it's beneficial for you to just go scorched earth.
And when we say second cycle, we're looking at this from a longer term cycle of you run this year, then you run next cycle, and then you run the next cycle. And it's all about building the brand, both your brand and your platform of hopefully leftist ideals. And over time, you move whatever the general opinion is of your community in a favorable direction. And sometimes that requires you to actually win and hold office. And sometimes that just requires you to be the asshole in the room that's saying this is bullshit. Both of those can be equally productive.
Absolutely. As leftists, some of the issues we're talking about, water quality, abolishment of police. But again, we had to talk within the constructs of the people you're running to represent. So things like reform are the words they want to hear. We talk about jobs. We can talk about public transportation. We could talk about all types of leftist ideals. And so the question will be, how do you get your ideals across? Or at least how do you get talked to? And the one way that we can get you to get talked to is if you are contrarian enough that the local newspaper needs somebody to pit the incumbent against. That's the absolute best outcome for your first cycle, is to be the person that is changed, or the contrarian, or the person that sticks out, in which the local newspaper want to publish you as the opposing argument.
So you're running for mayor and you're running against an incumbent mayor, and that incumbent mayor thinks X. You come out and say, I think X is wrong. That is your branding.
Here's why. Boom, boom, boom.
And creating that contrarianism will increase your brand recognition. Is it going to help you win? Perhaps not, because like we said earlier, it's very difficult to go up against an incumbent, but it's something that you need to know, and you need to assess that as part of your plan. So if you want to grow your brand and don't care about winning because you don't think winning is possible because you've gone through some decision calculus that we're going to outline, going against the incumbent is a good decision because it will get you more press. It will get you wider recognition of your ideas, because the idea that the existing government is wrong and you're there to say it is itself newsworthy.
All right, so you decide you want to run. You've looked at the offices. You decided that running for city council on off-year election or off-cycle election means that it's only going to be 3 or 4 people running. In general, you can ask the county clerk or city clerk or whoever is running your elections who's all running. A lot of people will put their name in the hat before the final day.
So there's a filing deadline. You have to file to run for office by some deadline, and you usually have to pay some nominal fee. So be aware of that.
Yeah. So it's 10, 20, 100, depending on your city. Some states have requirement that cities a certain size run elections a certain way, so there's different costs associated with it. Some counties have a different requirement. You have to live in the city for 6 months of the school district. You have to always be a resident of the place you're trying to run. There's all these different things you got to look forward or look at. If you're running for a school board, you got to make sure you're in the district that you're running for, because sometimes the boundaries move and it can be weird and upsetting to people and then find out they're in the wrong district or whatever it is. But you know, you're going to run. So a lot of times you can be prepared to run for different seats depending on how many people are running. So you can call and ask the city clerk, county clerk, the Board of Elections, whoever it is, who's all running. And if you decide to run, then you're going to go and put your name in the hat. Now the question is, what are you going to do next? How do you convince people, and what is your actual strategy? So one strategy you can do to help push you over the edge is find yourself some friends to run with you. And the reason why this is important is that you can actually dilute the voting pool enough that you can just win by sheer random name selection. And it goes like this. If there's 3 people running, so people have a 1 in 3 chance of voting for you, right? And if it's just one seat at large, that's really hard to get past the incumbent. But if there's 7 people running for one seat and the other 5 are sandbagging themselves, right? They're running on their own. You're not paying them. This is not an illegal thing. This is not, you're not conspiring. You're just 5 of your friends are all running for the same seat and they just sandbag. Now there's 8 people or nine people in this race, or seven people, whatever it happens to be, and now people have to choose one of seven, but you're trying to do the name recognition game. You're attempting to get your name up high enough to compete with the incumbent, and this is exactly where the branding comes in. Your job now is to get your name out there as hard as you can, because you need your name to be synonymous with whatever seat you're running for. It's literally city council Jim. That's it. You want your name, Jim Smith, associated with city council. That's the only thing you're running. That's your literal campaign. People have to get your name there, and the more diluted you can get the voting pool, the easier it is for you to get above the threshold for winning.
And the idea of dilution is that if you take any random person and they say, oh, I'm going to vote for city council slot number one, and it's eight people, if somebody's uninformed, they have to sift through eight names and eventually settle on one. And just from a statistical point of view, they're less likely to choose the incumbent. They don't know anything about it because there's eight names, versus if there's two names and it's you against the incumbent. So that's 50-50 basically. So there's a 50% chance that they choose the incumbent. Whereas if there's eight people, there's only a 12.5% likelihood that the incumbent is chosen. It's a strategy against the random people that have no idea what's going on and just arbitrarily choose names. That can make the difference. This is the dilution strategy. And it absolutely requires that you are able to brand your name so that the people that are paying attention that you want to vote know exactly who to vote for. And the other side is doing the same thing. So the incumbent has a network of people that are saying, we want you to vote for Jane Smith. And the other eight candidates are potential threats if they don't know what's happening. They just say, vote for Jane over and over and over and over.
So we talked about voter dilution, which is a great strategy. We talked about name recognition. So name recognition, again, is just your name over and over again. It's Jim for city council, Jim for city council. That's, you don't deviate. That's all you do. You have to have the appearance of a campaign. That's a really important thing to have. We know from studies, we know from running campaigns that yard signs do not vote. And we know that t-shirts do not vote, and we do not, mailers do not vote, but it does do one thing, which is name recognition. You do not have to stick a yard sign at everybody's corner. You don't have to print more than 10, but you do have to put 10 yard signs out randomly in places just to make it appear that your campaign is functioning, because people want to see yard signs. You have to print 10 or 20 t-shirts to wear in the parade because people want to see that your campaign is functionally has t-shirts. You got to possibly print your own handouts to hand out in the parade or stick in a few mailboxes here or there. Actually, not in mailboxes. That's a federal crime. Stick it in the newspaper slot or door. And do door knocking, which we know is also functionally never going to work. If you live in a city of 70,000 people or 20,000 people or 5,000 people, you cannot possibly knock 5,000 doors. Because the number of volunteers you have scales linearly with the number of people in your town. If you have 5,000 people, you'll probably have, at the most, 5 volunteers. 5 volunteers cannot knock on 5,000 doors. That's just absolutely no way for that to work. It does not work. So we know traditional routes, knocking on doors does not work. We know the traditional routes, campaign signs and t-shirts and mailers do not work, which is great because you are a low-funded campaign. So you have to do things like the appearance. So you're on Twitter and social media and whatever it is trying to get people happy about your campaign, but really you have to use the traditional methods like all of the questionnaires, literally all of the questionnaires. And what I mean by questionnaires are the paper has questions, the local chamber of commerce will have questions, there'll be a debate from the League of Women's Voters or something, right? You got to do those events. You have to appear to be functional because your name recognition comes from literally media that you can't generate enough of because you don't have any money and you don't have a network to generate it. So your only real way to doing this is to generate as much media about yourself as possible through traditional, non-traditional means.
And this is a key question you have to answer on the Can You Win questionnaire. Do you have a mechanism to generate this brand? You can posit that you can print 100 million yard signs and put a yard sign up in every single person's yard and say, well, I did 1 billion yard signs, so therefore I'm going to win. But that's not how it works. Yard signs don't do anything beyond the very menial perception of a valid campaign. They don't do anything. And the perception is necessary to appear capable of winning, which is what the electorate needs to think of you in order to vote for you. In answering the question, can you win? Part of the question you have to answer is, can I do the nominal amount of work to appear as though I can win?
Can I print 10 yard signs at $10 to $20 a piece? Yes, you can, if you have $200 in funding. There's a nominal fee to enter, and we're not going to dance around that. You're probably going to need about $500 to run, $600 to run. You're trying to stay below the reporting threshold of your state or city or county. That's your job. And you can run an actual functional campaign below the reporting threshold, which could be 500, 700, 1,000. it depends on the city and the state and the county and what it is. Your job is to stay below the reporting threshold because you don't want to report anything, but you can also bring in donations. Your job is to break even at the end of the campaign and do the very minimum required to run. So you're going to need about $150, $200 in signs at the most, $100 in shirts the most, $100 in prints, most of which you can recoup if you can ask people for money, which is the next part of this whole, who can you convince to win? So the other question you should ask yourself is, do you have access to a group of weirdos who like you? And this group of weirdos can be anything from your church, your Boy Scouts, your Little League, your neighborhood, whatever groups you're active in. It doesn't have to be any big group. It could be any small group of 20 people, 10 people.
So more generically, this is identify the institutions in your voting region and figure out how they are likely to support you and whether they are willing to overtly support you in some direct fashion. So if you're on a T-ball team, for example, you ought to be able to convince some of the parents that you're the right choice. If you can't do that, you're probably pretty unlikely to win. So doing some of these small sample sizes and asking around, hey, do you think XYZ would be a good thing to run on? And if everybody's like, oh God, no, I would never vote for that, then you know that your likelihood of winning is perhaps pretty low. This sort of sampling can also help you frame how you want to present your platform as well. So if you say, I want to abolish the police, like you said earlier, and people are like, oh God, no. But then you say, oh, well, what if we reform the police? And everybody's like, that would be terrific. That's a clue as to where your general community stands and how you want to present your issues. So identifying institutions that can help you win or can help you lose because perhaps they're committed to the other side, like the Chamber of Commerce, is also a key piece of determining whether you can or cannot win. If there are, let's say, five institutions, it's a church, it's a Chamber of Commerce, T-ball, whatever groups of people exist. If you go through just a trivial tally and determine that they're all probably going to oppose me, you can't win because you need these institutions to support you because you have no brand recognition. You need some manner by which more than one person will latch onto your ideas and hopefully organically spread that you're the right guy by saying, Jim is running for city council and he believes X. He believes that everybody that plays T-ball is a good person. You can disseminate that to the T-ball people, and they're like, you know what? I agree with Jim. I'm going to vote for Jim. That's an institution on your side that will help you win.
More importantly, you have to make a decision about the area you live in. If you know that your area is left or right or in the middle, you have to make a determination of your messaging. Because again, we talked about earlier, you can either decide to tear it down or try to win. You can't do both. You cannot build both, and you cannot be both. That's just not how it works. So you cannot rally a group of leftist people in your area if there's three of you, because that network isn't big enough to win. But if you're in Kansas and you want to try to upend the politics in Kansas, you probably can't run on an ultra-left platform. You have to run on a neoliberal platform without actually tipping your hand that you're a leftist. This is really important to understand. You have to understand where the majority of votes are going to come from. If you are in a Democratic district, you can probably run as a shitlib. And you might be able to run as a more leftist shitlib, but you can't run full left. Unless, of course, you want to disrupt the Democratic Party in that area. What this comes down to is how you frame your arguments. It's really important that you understand that you're probably not going to win the Chamber of Commerce endorsement if you're talking about opening up public housing, because they don't want that, right? They're not going to vote. They're not going to protect you or ask people to vote for you if you're talking about a $15 an hour minimum wage. But those might be really important to you, which means that if asked something like, I will consider any type of proposal put in front of me because I am a middle of the ground individual who likes to listen to both sides. Things like that get you elected to local government. Now, we're not saying give up your ideals. We're saying if you want to win, you have to decide how you're going to win. And winning requires that you go out and you kiss the ring of all the local people who can vote for you. It means you have to be part of all the events. You have to go out and do the parades and all of the local fundraising stuff. You have to put out a t-shirt. You have to put out a couple yard signs. But it does not mean you have to run local radio ads. It does not mean you have to run $10,000 in Facebook ads. It basically means you just have to get people to recognize your name just enough to win. And then come from a series of things. That can come from you doing the voter dilution. It can come from you kissing enough ass of the local sports team by saying, I think we should redo all the parks, right? It comes from you saying to the Ducks Unlimited group, hey, I think we should have more ducks we can shoot in this area. It literally means finding the organizations whose ass you can kiss to win and finding a way to frame your argument. Because in an off-year election, the only people that vote are the bunch of weirdos who have something to gain from voting. If you want to run, if you need help with infrastructure, if you need help with how you're going to frame your positions, you can email us at podcast@workingmovement.com and we will respond back and help your campaign.
So to wrap this back around, if you identify who the incumbent is, and that incumbent is tied to a certain number of institutions that support some position or messaging group, you have to figure out what messaging can appeal to those institutions that would cause their support for the incumbent to decrease. Alternatively, you can identify more institutions that your messaging might appeal to and surrender some institutions to the incumbent. But you have to go through and do that calculation. If I do X, I can expect to win this group of people. If I do Y, I can expect to win this group of people. All of this has to be done in the context of, this is what my messaging is going to be. This is who I'm running against. This is the office I'm running for. And this is the group of people that I think is going to vote for me. It's not a linear determination as to whether you can win. It's a culmination of a number of factors that you all have to weigh and assess before you decide that your campaign is winnable. Now, we've talked plenty about the teardown campaign. If at any point along the way you realize that I don't think I can win, you should shift focus. There's nothing to be gained by running a winning campaign that loses. Be the asshole that stands up and says, this is bullshit. And at the end of the day, even though you lose, you can be the guy that said, look, I called this out as directly as I could in 4 years when this person is up for election again, and we all realize that the water is poisoned. Just remember, I was the guy that said this was fucked.
One of the key takeaways here is when you decide to run, you have to determine which position do I want to run for. So a lot of times there's city council versus mayor. Do I want to run for school board? There's lots of seats that are open every single cycle, and it is important that you pick one and at least pick one every cycle to run. Even if you lose the first year, you just keep running. It's really important to even understand that you can't win and be the sole believer of your ideologies and get anything done. You cannot be one person on a 7-person council and get anything done if you're the contrarian. You need a group of weirdos to have a majority, which also means you got to take your energy and attempt to groom and move as many people to run with you as possible.
For future episodes and to learn more about the worker movement, join us at workermovement.com.